This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C. It has just gone past 6 a.m. in the morning. It's Thursday, the 7th of January. And unfortunately, today I think it's a bit of a blue day. I think on the back of the fact that yesterday, when I look at the headlines, I am worried. COVID-19 cases all-time high, 2,593. And added to these worries is the acknowledgement by the DG of Health that our health system is at almost at breaking point.
That's right. Not only in Malaysia, but as you know, developments are unfolding very rapidly in the United States as mobs have invaded the U.S. Capitol, suspending the approval of Vice President
Joe
Biden.
Which is supposed to be just a rubber stamp.
And that's now all been suspended as anarchy has essentially descended in the capital.
Which is like a rare thing, right? When you think about them, they're the bastion of democracy. They pride themselves on the institutions, and it seems to be falling apart at the seams.
And this government claims to be the government of law and order, and clearly there's no evidence of that.
Well, maybe because the current president, well, give him another, 13 days? In the past has been fanning the flames, which is something we will be talking about at 7:30. Because, you know, it's very timely. Actually, we're going to discuss the Georgia runoffs, but I think this is something else that we will be discussing with Robert Shapiro, who's a professor of government at Columbia University.
But you know, I've got the answer to this, to solve all these problems. What we need are 20,000 mothers.
Born just 20,000 mothers.
80s. We transport them, teleport them strategically in different locations and give them two tight slaps. Those spoilt brats and recalcitrant people. I think that's what the answer is required and called for.
I'm not sure that would be the solution. Maybe it might work for some people born in the 80s.
But you've seen pictures, right, of mothers dragging protesters and say, stop doing this now, and then twist the ear and come back to and wash the dishes, right? Come back home and wash the dishes.
Do your job.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it's a very sad state of affairs. So anyway, we will be covering some of these very important stories throughout the day. But first off, what do we have, Philip? A little bit of love, I hope.
Yes, the government in Japan is going to invest in AI to accelerate matchmaking.
Okay, will it work? I'm curious.
I hope so. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Meanwhile, I'll be discussing whether, you know, in life, whether it's good to band together so that you have a common voice and a stronger one, a louder one. But as usual, do let us know. Get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, here's Shakedown Street by The Grateful Dead. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Shakedown Street by Grateful Dead. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and I'm joined by Philip C. today. It has just gone past 6:08 in the morning, Thursday, 7th of January. And I think the first thing in front of us is this rather interesting article from one of the most, I suppose, biggest
hallowed institutions technology.
Yeah, so it's from Fast Company, the website, and it's the article is entitled, Two Alphabet Worker Union Members on Why Google Unionized.
That's right.
Would you think that in the first place, Google, which you kind of imagine is this place which allows employees to do what they want, they nurture them, they grow them, they listen to all to what they have to say, not so bureaucratic, not autocratic, would suddenly need a union? Because the concept of a union is, okay, let's get together and protect ourselves from the bosses.
Absolutely correct. Interestingly, traditional unions have always been about banding together to negotiate financial terms, to talk about your compensation and benefits. But this union is a bit different. They're talking actually about the ethics, the work, the culture of the organization. So this definition of union is a bit different from how we usually traditionally view unions to be, where we talk about your salaries and, you know, work environment. But here
If you get fired,
right?
Then you run to the union.
Or process of disciplinary hearings and so on and so forth. But this one is really simply about how the organization presents itself, makes decisions on the business. So I find this very fascinating because you're kind of going into this gray area of what management does.
Yeah.
And it's very challenging.
And I think also what's interesting about this is how much the employee, their expectations have changed over time. when you think about it, right, like when I joined work, my goodness, 30 years ago. No, like less than that. Okay. I remember it was very autocratic.
Mm.
And it was pretty much, I mean, you get told what to do and you just do it.
Yeah.
And how you felt about it.
Pretty top
feeling,
down.
Feelings.
What feelings?
Upper two, you know, like, yeah sorry.
Just do it.
Just do it. Feelings didn't count. Only the brave kind of spoke out. And it was like you had to earn your place to speak up. You know, and you had to be a manager. You couldn't, if you just joined, I mean, did you know what you were talking about? Or, hello, you fresh face off university kind of comment. But I think things have improved. And I'm not one that believes that the old system works. Don't get me wrong. I think everyone should have a say. But I do wonder for someone like Google, you know, the reality is that when they first started, they were a company whose ethos was do no evil. And they quietly removed that, you know, they just quietly removed that tagline. So, I mean, how do you manage? Because now you're like a trillion-dollar company. I think there's something like 100,000+ employees at Google and maybe another 50,000 who are what they call contract workers. How do you ensure, like, in an organization that has become so large, really everyone has a say in what they do?
That's the point of organizations. That's absolutely the point of organizations and hierarchy, where there's a chain of command. And I think when you have these really smart people, where there's this whole perspective of holacracy, flat structure, everybody has a say, then this will ignite. And I want to build on the point you said about do no evil. And what Google did was they changed it to do the right thing.
Okay.
And I'm not sure whether that's really the right way to do it. Because sometimes you need to shed light on darkness so that you can have clarity, you know. So the do no evil, I felt, provided a lot of clarity.
Okay.
Because you can draw the boundaries of what evil is or, you know, have clear
distinctions. So in a way, there are like, I suppose there's no black and white in the world today, but there's a little bit clearer in terms of what you shouldn't do.
That's right.
Versus where there's a little bit more of ambiguity in terms of what is good.
Yes, the frame of what is right is so broad. I think this is where it leads to so many conversations and disputes and debates. And what's happening in Google is not a recent development. It happened from 2018 when 20,000 staff walked out due to how they managed sexual harassment cases. And I think all this blew up as a result of the sacking of their key AI ethics researcher, who had issues with how they had developed the algorithms with respect to Google. So I think all this basically came to a boil, and now 400 of these staff have developed this Alphabet Workers Union.
I think the key lesson for me about this is that in any organization, whatever your size, you need to make sure that there is a feedback loop with your staff, right? That you take into consideration what they think. And even though you grow, you still need to work on this feedback loop. It might have been very easy when there were 10 of y'all, and it might have been still okay when there's 100. But of course, there are real challenges as you get bigger and bigger. But never forget that, because otherwise, it will come back and haunt you. But let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have some messages for you. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Hypocritical Kiss by Jack White, which is very appropriate because it's related to the next story that we're going to be talking about. Anyway, it's gone past 6:17 in the morning. It's Thursday, the 7th of January, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. And yeah, I kind of alluded to the next conversation, which is from this Vice article, and it's entitled Japan Plans to Invest in AI Matchmaking to boost its declining birth rate.
This problem is not a Japan problem now. It's an Asian problem.
It's a universal problem,
but particularly evident in Korea, China, Singapore and Japan, right?
Apparently, Malaysia is not far behind too.
You think so?
Yeah, because we are facing a declining birth rate. Yes, and aging population.
Well, the government of Japan will be allocating $19 million to local authorities that run matchmaking services. And in Japan, more than half of the nation's 47 prefectures actually already offer matchmaking services.
As part of like social protection.
Part of your public services, we actually offer love dating apps. Incredible.
So aside from education, healthcare, you know, now we'll throw in matchmaking.
We'll find love for you.
Well, kudos to them for admitting they have a problem, right? And offering yes. people solutions. Why not? I mean, I'm not saying that you really want the government to be involved in your love life. But when you think about it, your country that is so well known for this structural decline in birth rate, and this is a sad fact, they sell more adult diapers than they do baby diapers. That really gives you an indication where the population is heading, right? So they're thinking, hey, better we do something than do nothing at all.
And they've not been short of effort, because this does sound like a last-ditch effort, to be fair. They've had a lot of measures in place to try and boost its birth rate. They've been incentivizing marriages. They've been enforcing a child allowance system, making preschool education free. But that doesn't seem to translate into population growth.
Yeah, I think if we rewind back to the time when Abe was the Prime Minister of Japan, one of his arrows of Abenomics was to actually get more women into the workforce and to actually raise the role of the women. And part of that was actually to like get women to go back to work, because in Japan, there was all these issues about childcare and, you know, marriage, and women didn't feel that they had a role in society. But I don't know it's whether it's also just a general Asian thing that unfortunately when it comes to, you know, family, women take that seat back. But in Japan, it's even worse, because in the first place, they don't even want to seem to want to get married, or enough people get married.
They call this term the parasite single, which is a terrible term, honestly.
Yeah, it sounds rather derogatory, right?
Yeah, I
want to say right now that there is nothing, absolutely nothing wrong in being single. But at the same time, if you want to find someone, there's also nothing wrong. I mean,
exactly. And you have a choice.
You have a choice. And I think that's the wonderful thing about today. People can make these choices. But I think it's also a symbol or signal that in many places of the world, even though it's increasingly more crowded and we have social media, sometimes maybe we are increasingly more lonely, and it's harder to find people because social media, you're no longer, and COVID-19, of course, 10 times worse, right? Because you can't even go out and mingle. You can't meet your friends who then you can meet other friends. Everything is done online, which is maybe why you've seen the rise of all these social dating apps, right? Bumble, yep. Coffee and Bagels. That's what my colleagues tell me. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. This is the new way to meet people.
Yeah, I think that there was a proliferation of these services during the lockdown. I want to build on the point you said about Abe's three arrows or four. And
there were more. Yeah, there were a couple of arrows.
Yeah, and one arrow was getting women participation. And from the root cause, I'm not sure whether that helped or actually made the situation worse. Because while, yes, we want women to go out and participate in the workforce, it's very important to question the motivation why they do that. Many, if they feel insecure that there's not enough income, and if the spouse is not able to provide, that makes it hard to build a family.
Yeah.
So if you go to the root cause to why population is declining, perhaps the core issue is that the economy is not prosperous enough.
Yeah, people don't feel like they can afford to have another child.
And families feel that both mother and father need to be in the workforce. There's no time to create and build a family. And if you go to the root cause, I don't think all these incentives, which are proliferating everywhere in Singapore, there was this incentive to have to be pregnant during lockdown. It doesn't work if you don't sort out the root cause, which is to build an economy that's prosperous, that's available.
But then how do you find, how do you then find the root cause or help people find love though? That's even more challenging if you ask me.
Firstly, the government has to butt out, you know, each of us find love, because everyone finds love in their different ways.
But I do think there's nothing wrong in using these apps or using AI to help you along the way. I think, why not? I think it's I don't see the harm in it. I mean, of course, you have to be careful of your personal safety. You have no clue who this person might be. Do your due diligence. I mean, there have been cases of fraud and all that. But otherwise, there's always new ways out there that maybe we should be open to exploring. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Our House by Madness. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, it is just gone past 6:40 in the morning. It's Thursday, the 7th of January, and that was Agoraphobia by Deer Hunter. And by the way, which is the fear of being, like, you can't escape, which is kind of scary when you think about this phobia, because it's so timely with our next story, which is, you know, the fact that in the US, there's a bit of chaos going on, isn't there?
That's right. A whole mob is basically storming the US Capitol, suspending the voting proceedings to elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. So that is all now suspended as anarchy has essentially hit the Capitol.
Yeah, but besides this, yesterday was supposed to be a good day for the Democrats because there was the Georgia runoffs. And, you know, for a change for Georgia, which has been traditionally such a red seat, is now a blue seat, right? So the two candidates managed to win. So,
and they won with larger majorities than what Joe Biden won with.
Yeah, exactly. So now the Republicans and the Democrats each have control of 50 seats within the House of the Senate. But this means that with Vice President Kamala Harris casting the deciding vote in the event of a tie, so Biden maybe gets his way when it comes to a lot of changes he wants in the US. But like you say, I think that noise or that news was just completely overshadowed by this ruckus. It's more than a ruckus, actually, at Capitol building. So in a dramatic street scene, demonstrators swarmed the building as Congress members were escorted out by the police. Biden has called on Donald Trump to put an end to the siege. And Trump himself, for a change, has come out to urge demonstrators to go home, saying that the country needs peace and law and order, while reiterating his claims that the Democrats stole the elections. Again, it's like this bad song just keeps playing and again, 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 and again, and again with him, though.
This got me thinking, I mean, these two incidences where now the Democrats have control over the Senate, and with this whole debacle in the Capitol, I wonder two things. Firstly, will Biden expand and make his agenda more ambitious? And will Republicans split and actually vote more in favor of Biden just to make the point that they're not Trumpian in nature? Because this behavior is close to unacceptable. It's outrage, to be fair. And many Republicans have already voiced their concern and disgust with what's happening.
I think they're doing that partially because they're thinking about the next presidential elections, which is happening in 4 years' time. But all very interesting questions we are going to ask Robert Shapiro, professor of government at Columbia University at 7:30, after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. So do tune in for that. I think, you know, there'll be lots of questions. But in the meantime, if we switch our attention to unfortunately, COVID-19, and like we said earlier this morning, all-time record high cases for Malaysia, 2,593.
Health system close to breakdown, apparently.
Yes. And I think, the good news is the vaccines are here, but we still need to investigate what in the first place happened. How did this virus come about? What's the source? And on the back of that, the World Health Organization, or the WHO, the team was supposed to investigate this in the city of Wuhan. But they have been denied entry. So two members were already en route, with the WHO saying, WHO saying that the problem was a lack of visa clearances.
I find that quite hard to believe. Originally, there was a plan for 10 members to actually join this delegation. What we understand was that there were three people en route. Now two are en route, but one is suspended in a third country. And I find it hard to believe that China can't process 10 visas in a month.
Please, this is a country that can come up with their GDP in 10 days. A population of 1.3 billion people, one of the largest countries in the world, but you can't sort out visas
They claim it's logistics, but I think there's an overarching concern about the nature of the investigation, where they want to visit, what data are they going to demand for and ask for. I think those elements are still not resolved. And perhaps WHO perhaps jumped the gun, went ahead without further consultation. And I think this is a way of China basically just pushing back to say, no, I think we have to kind of have a discussion again to make sure that
just basically saying, look, we don't want to be the country where...
held responsible.
Yeah, that, you know, really, yes, the virus came from us, from that market in Wuhan. And we knew about it months and months before, because I think there is data to show that there were incidences of COVID-19 in Europe and US, even in November, before, you know,
that's right,
kind of the news kind of leaked out in late December, early January. So it had been already happening. So maybe they don't want to be blamed. And it was a similar situation when you think about it for SARS, right? Because when SARS occurred, the Chinese government kept it under wraps for months, okay? But the point about viruses is that we need to act quickly, and there needs to be transparency. There needs to be acknowledgement there's a problem. Health agencies need to work together, not independently. Otherwise, we might have another COVID-19, and look at the consequences that we are all facing today as a result of it. It's not a blame game. It's a solution-driven one that we need to focus on. But give us your thoughts. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Xiaoling with Philip C, and this is The Morning Run. It is 6:50 in the morning. It's a Thursday, 7th of January, and that song was Just Can't Get Enough by Depeche Mode, which maybe Trump is trying to sing all the time. You just can't get enough. You just need to stay back in the White House a little bit longer, you know. Give me one more term, even though I didn't win it. But anyway, looking at some of the headlines out there, sadly, I want to bring the attention back to Malaysia. And that was at yesterday's press conference by our Health Ministry Director General Tan Sri Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah. He has sounded an alarm, and this is an article based on Malaysia Kini. He sounded the alarm on the state of the COVID-19 pandemic in the country, and he's prescribing a targeted version of the Movement Control Order, or MCO, to reduce the strain on the healthcare system. So he said that our healthcare system has been pressured and we are at breaking point because cases are increasing every day. We may not be able to accommodate patients in our facilities. So his point is it has to be more targeted. So rather than involve the whole nation like what happened on March 18, the strategy will have to change. It will be more localized and, in terms of implementation as well. I think discussions are still ongoing, and I think they are looking towards making some announcements as soon as possible.
As cases hit a record high yesterday, past 2,500, the Edge has a really good chart, which shows the active cases versus patient beds that you mentioned just now, Xiaoning. 24,347 number of active cases, but we have only 28,674 patient beds available. So we've really hit nearly past 80% already.
I think the other worrying thing is the R0, right, which is the infection rate. And it's still stubbornly high at 1.1. I think the Health Ministry's target is to bring it down to 0.5, which we have unfortunately not been successful at. But I think the point is that they don't want to have a national lockdown because the economic cost is incredibly high. Mm-hmm. Things have somewhat changed. I mean, we do have contract tracing. But the point is, how do we do it effectively? And I think the one thing that we can do as Malaysians is to play our part, and the reality is that, yes, there is lockdown fatigue. It is tiring. But, we really do need to curtail our movements again when you think about it, right?
I think this debate about a partial elongated lockdown doesn't seem to work because it's just perpetuating the fatigue. Perhaps a really hard and sharp
Do you think that's lockdown. The solution, though? Because the economic consequences are real. I mean, you've always got to balance this, flatten the pandemic curve and the economy. I'm not sure. I honestly, there's no one
right answer.
There's no one right answer. Yeah, I think so. It's probably going to be a combination of things, but that nonetheless, we will be covering this story. And I think his point is that they need to implement a strategy so that the impact is high with a reasonable cost and a good outcome. And good luck in finding that solution.
Oh, you'll never win. You'll never please everybody. I think that's what everyone has to recognize, that you just have to do the right thing. Or don't do evil.
Yeah, don't do evil. Good luck, and let's do our part, though, as Malaysians. Right. But what else do you have in front of you, Philip?
Well, on the following article, BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, is exercising its ESG muscle. It has a 1.6% equity stake in Top Glove, and it's voted against the re-election of six of its independent directors at Top Glove, as it holds the view that the board has failed in its oversight responsibility relating to its migrant workers' health and safety.
Wow, I do like it when I see shareholder activism. I'm all for it. And I think funds should be more vocal, especially if your mandate is an ESG one.
Correct.
Right? Of course, these are inverted commas allegations. But actually, if you ask me, it's beyond allegations, right? Because there's a lot of evidence of that. But, even Top Glove has come on our show to admit that they can do much better.
Yeah. And it takes, I think, an external, international, world's leading asset manager to really shake the boat, I think, and really get things moving, perhaps, which is a bit disappointing and sad.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect, I think the reality is that, you know, for our glove companies in Malaysia, which are world-class, by the way, we're the world's largest exporter of gloves, we should also lead by example on having world-class standards for the workers who actually contribute to all these firms' success. And you don't want cases to blow up, right? And they unfortunately bear the brunt of this COVID-19. Meanwhile, if I'm looking at the Straits Times, this is a quick kind of sub-headline saying that 2.5 million iCINAH applications approved, totaling 19.62 billion. And these are some of the initiatives to kind of alleviate or ease the economic consequences or economic scar tissue of COVID-19. But we've also discussed many times on BFM that if ideally you can afford not to withdraw it, you shouldn't, because, you know, as we know, Malaysians don't have enough for retirement.
Yeah, the withdrawal bill is large, 19.62 billion ringgit, with the first month's payout amounting to 10 billion. That's a huge bill.
That is. It does show you the consequences of COVID-19 and who feels the brunt of it more. You know, in Malaysia, we always divide it between the T40s, M40s, B40s. I think if you ask me, there's probably even a subcategory right at the bottom of that who are the ones applying for this. And we do need to really focus on economic recovery. But unfortunately, at the moment, it seems to be more politicking than ever. Something we'll be talking to with Ben Sofian at 7:45 about the state of Malaysian politics. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence, to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's Magic in the Music by Jimmy Castor Bunch. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.